This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello, and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we're going to talk to Hai Conrad. He has written a new mystery called Death on the Patagonian Express, an Amy's travel mystery, and it's just out from Kensington Books. Hello.
Hey, David. How are you?
Good. How are you doing? And you're calling from New Zealand.
New Zealand, yes. Yes, we love to travel, and whether I'm doing research for a book or just traveling on my own, it's one of our great joys in life.
Yeah, it sounds like you'd love to travel. I mean, Amy and Fanny love to travel too, it sounds like, just from reading the book. They seem to like to travel.
Yeah, what a coincidence, yes.
I mean, I love the cover on this book. And then we have the spilled wine and the train you can see in the distance there. So it's an interesting cover.
Oh yeah, the Kensington does a really good job of doing the illustrations, and they're terrific people to work with.
So how did you get involved in writing mysteries? You were doing the Monk TV series for a while. I know one of my favorite series.
Thank you. I guess I've been involved in mysteries for a long time, and it dates back to. I had a show that was off Broadway. I was a playwright. So I had a show that was running, and one of the backers from the show was developing a new technology back in those days, which was the laser disc, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so he asked me if I had any ideas for a project that would work on laser disc that had some interactivity. You know, it was primitive interactivity back then. And I came up with something that we called the mystery disc, in which it was branching and you used different audio tracks for different scenes. And it was, for the time, a very complex thing. And I'd always loved mysteries, you know, as a kid reading Encyclopedia Brown or Arthur Conan Doyle.
Oh, God.
that was fairly successful. And we did a follow-up video for the laser disc, and then it just kind of mushroomed from there. I did a lot of interactive games. I did Clue VCR, and I did quite a few Clue projects for Parker Brothers. It was Parker Brothers back then, and it just kind of snowballed from there. And then I got was approached by a publisher to Sterling to do a series of whodunit books for kids and for adults. And it was actually one of the guy who actually created Monk went into a bookstore to come up with ideas for the series, because he had just gotten the series picked up, and he needed new plots. So he went to a bookstore, and luckily for me, found my books and loved them, and tracked me down. And this was, again, right before you could track anyone down on the internet, so it took him a while to track me down. And he basically said, look, I'm either going to steal your stories or you're going to come work for me.
Really?
So that's how I got involved in Monk. And then after Monk, I did some work on White Collar for the same network.
Another one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, it was. I've had good luck with those shows. And then I started doing books. I did novels. I mean, I'd always done books of short mysteries, and I did four of the Monk novels. There were a series of, I think, 19 Monk novels. Lee Goldberg.
Yes, he did a lot of them too. Yeah,
he wrote the first 15, and then I wrote the last four. And then started writing my own series, which is, you know, the Amy's Travel Mysteries, which is great fun. It's odd when you're working on someone else's project, whether it's Monk or White Collar or Clue, that you're always in someone else's voice. You're always kind of writing from someone else's viewpoint. And, you know, I wanted to have a series in which I could sort of write in my own voice, even though it's you know, Amy and Fanny, my two main characters. But you can sort of, you know, write from your own travel experiences and the things that you love about life and about travel. And that's how I got into this particular series.
Now, how many Monk episodes did you write? You know,
I wound up being co-executive producer on the show as well as the writer. And the way writing, you know, you only personally write a couple of episodes a season. The rest of the time, you are developing the plots. You're sitting in a room with four other writers, and you're basically coming up with the plots. You're coming up with the jokes. You're coming up with a very detailed outline, which is sometimes, you know, 15, 20 pages long, just the outline. And then one of you or an outsider or someone that you hire for the episode will take that outline and turn it into a script, and their name is on that script.
Right.
And then after that, then it comes back to the room, and we tweak it, and we change it, and we send it off to L.A., and they come up with suggestions. So it's a very collaborative process. But if you're actually in the room working on it, then, you know, you are contributing or working on, you know, every single episode.
Right. I would think the ideas would be easy to come up with. It's writing all the dialogue that would be difficult, the funny dialogue. And
No, actually, you know, we had great help from Tony, who is a wonderful comedian, and all of our other actors. No, the hard part, actually, were the stories. You would, because the stories in Monk were kind of very, very simple. They didn't get in the way of the comedy, and yet they were twisty. They had, you know, so someone would come up with an idea of, wouldn't it be funny if Monk was in prison?
Exactly.
And
yes.
Then so you sit down and you say, okay, is he in prison voluntarily? Is he there for a trumped-up charge? Did he do something with the OCD that caused a disaster? You know, why is Monk in prison? And then, okay, you figure that out. Is he in prison overnight? Well, that would be funnier if he were in prison overnight. And, you know, what is the crime? What is the murder, in involved? In fact, when we did the episode, Monk Goes to Jail, we developed it in the room. We had a guest writer come in, and someone who actually had worked on Murder, She Wrote many years ago. So she came in, and we handed off the outline to her, and she wrote it, and then it came back, and we were kind of mulling it over, and we thought that the plot itself didn't quite work. And so we completely gutted it and changed the plot. And so this was probably the only time in which, when the writer of the show, the woman who was credited for writing that episode, when she turned on her TV and she watched the episode, she had no idea who did it. And she was the writer of the episode.
Really? Interesting.
So you know, there's a lot of collaboration that goes on.
Well, Amy and Fanny are really, really interesting characters in this. This is the third one in the series?
This is the third one in the series, right. You know, Amy is a kind of a meek woman who has had a tragedy in her life, and she is very timid about life. She used to love traveling, but she's kind of timid. And so I thought I would counterpoint her with, and she doesn't want to be involved in murders and mayhem and all that thing that's going around her. She would prefer to.
Fanny's kind of a busybody.
Oh, and if Annie's just like this force of nature, and she says, yes, of course we have to get to the bottom of this. We have to, you know, find out who the killer is. And so I think they make a nice counterpoint, and I love doing the, you know, for me, I think for a lot of writers, the dialogue comes fairly easy. You know, for me, the hardest part is sitting down and to write an action sequence. because then you have to do research and you say, okay, if someone hasn't had water for 1 day or 2 days, how do they behave? You know, how long? So you do all the research and then you have to do the description. You know, thank God for Google, because when it comes to doing descriptions, you can pull up, you know, just about any image you want to. And one of the great things about death in the Patagonian Express was that I had just spent like a month in Chile and Argentina, and knowing that I would do that book, and so coming up with ideas, and we had some really great guides. And I remember asking one, you know, if you wanted to make a body unrecognizable, a human body out in the middle of the desert, what animal would do that? And, you know, so, you know, he came up, how about the condor? How about this? And, you know, so it was great fun working with the gods, you know, asking them questions about murders and what's poisonous and what can kill you out there.
So you really love to write. I mean, obviously, writing's a passion of yours. I mean, you've been doing it for so long. And you've been traveling with your partner for 37 years, is that right?
Yeah, we have...
You barely sound 37.
Well, thank you. We met and started living together in 1979.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
It is a long time ago, yeah.
It seems like, I mean, in a way, I mean, we can all flash back to some part of our lives and remember the little things about it, but it really was, I mean, you think of 37 years ago, and boy, it doesn't seem like 37, but, I mean, when you try to remember everything, then you realize how long it has been.
And, right, and if you, you know, and you think about it, that it's been, I guess, over 5 decades.
Now, does he write also?
We met in the 70s. He has written a book or two. He's a psychologist, a doctor of psychology, and worked in advertising for many years, and ran an advertising agency. And he wrote a book on aging some years ago, and then he and I collaborated on a humor book together called Things Your Dog Doesn't Want You
to Know. How many books have you written?
I think with my current book contract, I think it's like 19.
19, okay. Do you ever get tired of writing?
You know, I was talking to the guy who created Monk, is a good friend, and Andy Bruckman. And, you know, I was saying, you know, why don't you retire? And he was asking me the same thing. And writers don't really retire. I mean, you know, Philip Roth, we retired, and I have a good friend who's a neighbor, Judy Bloom, and she says that she's written her last book. But, you know, writers tend not to have a lot of hobbies. And so, you know, sitting down for a couple hours a day, you know, is because, you know, we don't know how to do anything else is basically what it amounts to.
It's funny, you think of writers as being like moody and they drink a lot or they smoke a lot, and it's like they're all different. Every writer I talk to is different. They maybe they have little things. I mean, everybody's got something they like to do, whether it's eat or smoke or drink or whatever, you know, whatever makes them happy, you know. But some kind of when you're a writer, it's a very sedentary thing. You know, you're sitting all the time, you're writing.
Right. Well, we're now traveling in New Zealand, and we're here for a total of 5 months. And Jeffrey is very much into trying to become as outdoorsy as possible. So, you know, we take hikes just about every day here, and you know, I'm not sure. You know, every hike seems just as difficult as the previous hike for me. So I'm not sure exactly if it's improving my health or whatever. But you know, we're New Zealand. You kind of have to be active because there's nothing else to do. It's like go out and enjoy nature.
What I really was nice about this book is the more you get into it, the more interesting it gets. I love to see what they're gonna do next, Amy and her mother. You know, they're just interesting characters. What trouble are they gonna get into? How are they gonna get themselves out of this mess? You know, and sort of like that. And I guess that's intentional.
Oh yeah. We're you know, I write very plot driven stories. I mean, that's what you know, got me the job at Monk. And I don't have the confidence, I think, to take 20 pages and go into someone's mood that day. And I just, you know, if I'm bored writing it, then I think, you know, the reader's going to be bored reading it.
Well, I never missed an episode of Monk. Never.
No, it was great. It was great fun. There are some that I never watched the broadcast version because we watch it so many times before it gets to the broadcast version that when it actually gets on the air, it's kind of old news for us. So there are one or two that I never saw the broadcast version to. So you're, I think, ahead of me on that one.
Yeah, I never missed an episode. I loved it. And when Diddy Schramm left, I thought the show would fall apart. I was convinced it wouldn't work as well with this new girl, and yet it did. It did. The new girl you got seemed to.
Yeah, we had an interesting thing when Diddy left the show. We had an episode or two that we had written for her. You know, obviously you write episodes in advance. So we basically got the new girl in there, Natalie, and we didn't really change the dialogue all that much. I mean, we introduced her, you know, we changed the names, we changed, you know, she had a daughter, the previous one, Biddy had a son, you know, so we changed it all out. But we really didn't change the tone of her dialogue. So for like the first episode or two, it didn't work because we wrote it with the voice of the other girl.
But I love the way she...
With Sharona's voice.
Yeah, I used to love the way Natalie would just take on Monk sometimes, you know, really let him have it. And, you know, it just...
Yeah.
It was fun to watch.
The one who really let him have it, of course, was Sharona. The first character, and you know, she was very much a New Jersey blue collar. You know, I'm not going to take that from anybody. The first actress we had wanted for the role, who turned us down, she was becoming a big star at the time, was Queen Latifah.
Oh, really? Now that would have been interesting.
It was originally our dream. So Sharona kind of gave back as good as she got. And then when Natalie came in there, you know, Natalie comes from, the character comes from a wealthy family, and she's very attractive, and she's younger. And so when she was being mean, or, you know, when she was giving back to Monk, it just felt kind of mean. And so we decided that we had to make her the nicest girl in the world. We had to make her the nicest person in the world, and that the comedy would come from, you know, Monk being mean to her and her, you know, being nice and accommodating and maybe erupting every now and then. But the comedy would come from her being super, super nice and him, you know, occasionally being a jerk.
I remember when there was an episode where Monk was trying to hire a maid, I think, and there was this black woman, and I thought she was going to become a regular because she was so good with Tony Shalhoub. And I it was later in the series.
Yeah, there was one in which, she was, and she's gone. I forget the name of the actress, but she's gone on to do some really good stuff.
And she was great. She was absolutely terrific. I mean, I was laughing the whole time she was on. I thought, oh, this woman's got to become a regular on the show because she's so good. She just fits right in.
You know, it's very difficult with things because you don't, you know, actors' schedules always change. I mean, John Turturro played...
His brother, his weird brother.
And we would have, and he won an Emmy for working on Monk.
Oh, yeah.
And we wanted to use him more. We had plenty of stories that involved him, but he was always off doing a movie or doing a Broadway play. And so, you know...
Didn't he like doing the role?
He enjoyed it thoroughly, but, you know, I think we only used him for three episodes, perhaps.
Right.
And the rest of the time, he had other commitments.
And I guess making a movie, you can make more money too. To be quite honest, you know, because TV work is lucrative.
And it's all how your schedule works. I mean, in a TV, we'll hire a guest star a month or so before filming. If you're in a movie, you often will have commitments 6 months to a year later.
Right.
So, you know, you call up an actor and he says, no, I'm busy for the next 18 months. I can do it after that.
So what's the plan for this Amy series? You plan on writing 20 of these, or what's the plan?
Well, I'm right now researching locations in a fun way. We were in Sicily not too long ago, and I'm thinking that there could be a story set in Sicily, and I would love to take it further. In fact, we're in discussions now. I'm not sure how it will pan out, but we're in discussions with the Hallmark Channel to turn it into a series of
Cool. Do you think that's going to happen?
Oh, you never know in TV. In TV, you cannot hear back from someone for three months or 4 months, and then all of a sudden
they'll call up and say,
we want to start tomorrow.
That would be perfect for the Hallmark Channel, I would think. I mean, it sounds like the question is who would play the two parts. That would be the big thing. You know, who do you get? You certainly can't get Angela Lansbury.
We are talking to actresses, but of course I can't mention any names because there's nothing that's.
Can you give us any initials?
No, come on.
Hey, it's only us. You know, who's gonna say anything anyway? You know.
I would love to continue with the series, and right now I'm working on a book of short whodunits for another publisher, and so that's going to occupy me for the next 3 or 4 months.
But what kind of whodunits will they be? I mean, you mean like these minute mystery kind of things?
I have, I think, 10 books out there that are short mysteries, and some of them are for younger readers, sort of like the Encyclopedia Brown things, although I think that mine are a little twistier than Encyclopedia Brown. But and then some of them are more for adults. I've had a lot of educators contact me about how much these books help out even college students when it comes to trying to think logically and trying to piece things together. And some schools use my books as texts, as a way of trying to work together as a group and solve problems. And there are 10 of those that are currently out, and then I'm working on another one.
Now, is that an adult one you're working on, or a children's one?
The one I'm working on currently is for children.
Okay.
It's a 12-year-old detective and his 14-year-old brother, and some of them are kind of hard to figure out. I mean, it's a lot of fun to write.
So how many stories will there be in one book? Do you have any idea?
It is based now on book length because of the way that these books are done. So I'm going to turn in 15 stories to begin with, and we'll see if that fills the book or how many illustrations they want to have in. And they could come back and say 15 is the right number, or they could come back and say, we need another two or three stories to develop the page length.
Well, yeah, because kids like just devour stuff like that. You know, it's like, they get to the 15th one, they're like, give me more. It's like, it's hard. I mean, it's the kids are like that. They once they get into reading, it's hard to stop them.
Yeah, and if you if you go to HiConrad.com, I do publish some short mysteries on my website, taken from earlier books.
Now you live in Key West and Vermont. Is that Key West, Florida? I take it.
Yeah, Key West, Florida is usually where we spend our winters. This winter, of course, we're in New Zealand, and in the summers we're up in Vermont, on the southern tip of Vermont, right by Massachusetts.
So is it always warm in New Zealand this time of year?
It's not. They've had it's been a very chilly summer.
Can't be as chilly as here.
It feels like it sometimes. I think last summer, New Zealand had great weather. I think there was an El Nino that was coming through that just made everything kind of dry and warm. And, this year is like Mother Nature's revenge, and it's always kind of, we've had some great days, but I don't think it's been above like 70, 72 degrees the entire time, more or less.
Isn't that where Nicole Kidman is from, New Zealand?
I think she might be Australian. I don't know.
I mean, I think you're right. I think she is. Everybody gets Australia and New Zealand mixed up. Why is that? It's like,
except if you live here, then they're very Australianers make jokes of New Zealanders and vice versa.
Like the Scottish and the Irish. You don't want to call.
Yes, exactly.
I made the mistake of calling Ian Rankin Irish, and he's really Scottish. And I'll never forget how angry he was at me. But you know, it was a simple mistake that I made. It wasn't intentional to hurt him or anything. It just happened. You know?
Yeah.
But to Ian Rankin, why did I have to do it to such a big author? Why couldn't I do it to an everyday person? You know, it wouldn't have felt. So you're working on book four right now.
I am working on the thinking process of book four. Yeah, I thought that New Zealand would be the perfect location, but it's so outdoorsy that I don't want to repeat what I did with Patagonian Express, which had a lot of outdoorsiness to it. So I'm thinking that a better choice may be the setting in Sicily.
Now, Dearly Departed and Toward Death, where did they take place? And I haven't read them. They didn't send me those, so I didn't get a chance to read them. So,
oh, dang, you should. Toward Death was the first, and the concept with that one is that Amy is just starting her travel agency, and she has always loved mysteries, and she decides to do a road rally, where her guests drive from location to location, and sort of like
Cannonball Run.
Yeah, exactly. And so they drive from location to location, and it's not who gets there first; it's who picks up the right clues, etc. So there's this fictitious murder mystery during this road rally. And you pick up clues along the way, and every team takes on the persona of one of the characters in the murder mystery. Then murder really happens, and Amy finds out that this fictitious murder is based on a real murder that happened 5 years ago. And so the two are obviously connected somehow.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And that takes place in France and Italy. That's where the road rally happens.
Okay. And I picture Amy being about, let me guess, maybe about early 30s, maybe?
Yeah, she's 32, 33, early 30s.
And let me guess, Fanny's about 60 years old.
I think Fanny would not want you even to guess her age.
Which you know it, though. What is it?
yeah. She's early 60s. She's kind of built like a fire plug.
But she still has a lot of energy, though.
Yes, of course. Well, I'm well into my 60s, and I've got a lot of energy, so why not?
You don't sound like you're in your 60s. You sound very young. I mean, you have a youthful sound to your voice, so like you.
Oh, good. I hope I can continue to fool people.
Yes, cool people. Yeah. I'm sure you're just fine. But it's interesting. I always think about the ages of the characters when I read these books. I always like to know in my, it's like when I read Michael Connelly's books and I realize that Harry Bosch is like 60-ish, and I think he doesn't feel like he's 60. And I always think these characters, I guess, as an author, really, you don't want to age your characters too much. You don't want them to be carrying a cane around or anything, or sitting in a wheelchair.
Yeah, exactly. I think...
Unless it's Lincoln Ryan, but Lincoln Ryan...
It's always hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is always hard to age a character. And so one way of getting around it is putting your stories 2 or 3 months apart. So every novel, even though you only put out one novel a year, every novel is basically 3 or 4 months after the previous novel. So you don't have to age your characters as much.
Now, I have to ask you about your name, Hai. Is that really your first name, or is that a nickname, or?
Hai is short for Hiram.
Hiram.
And my father's family is Amish. Pennsylvania Dutch, and he left the Amish faith to go to World War II. He was patriotic, and the Amish are pacifists, so he left the church to go to World War II, and then found a nice Italian nurse during the war, and they married, and so I was raised in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, half Italian and half Amish.
Interesting.
So Hiram is an old biblical name, and I have...
was the king of Tyre, wasn't he? Hiram?
You know, I think so. You know, it's funny I should actually look into my own name.
Yeah, board. Shame on you for not knowing. I'm asking the question. You're supposed to know all the answers, you know? Isn't that the way it works?
I know. It would be a very simple internet search.
Would pick up on that. But, you know, it's just funny. I thought I'd give you a hard time there. So each one of these takes place 3 months. There's 3 months, and then there's a three-month gap afterwards.
Yeah, 3 or 4 months. Yeah, as I said, it's just a way of not having to age your characters so much. You know, rather than having it be a year or so, because, you know, the books come out once a year, and this next one may be a little more delayed because of other projects I'm doing. But, just to make them close together in proximity so she doesn't have to go from 32 to 35.
So you're you're much in demand then at these days.
You know, a writer kind of has to create his own work. I've been very lucky in that for quite a number of years, my biggest talent was answering the phone or answering an email, because someone would often track me down, you know, oh, you worked on this project, you'd be perfect for that project, or, you know, I love this that you did, please work on this. So, you know, just answering the phone has gotten me a lot of jobs. But, you know, writers are self-employed. They always have to, you know, they're like actors. They always have to look on to the next project.
Exactly. And what the wonderful thing about a writer is it doesn't matter how old they are. As long as they can write, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, there are some writers who, you know, kind of lose their mojo after, you know, so many years. I mean, there are, you know, sad stories of Ernest Hemingway, who, you know, he was ill towards the end of his life and was kicked out of his home in Cuba.
Well, definitely a tortured soul, for sure.
Yeah, and then just was sort of realizing that all of his best work was behind him. That when he was 20 and 30, that his style was cleaner and crisper, and he was more inventive. And then, you know, he gets into his 50s or so. I'm not sure when he died. I think he was only in his 50s or 60s.
So does your traveling partner help you with your books at all? Does he write any? Does he help you with some of the research or anything?
He will read them and come up with suggestions, or say, I don't understand this part or that part. But so that's a great help, because not many people read my stuff before it goes out there. I'm not part of like a writer's group,
right,
or anything.
It sounds like you'd like to be.
Basically, you know, it wouldn't be bad. I don't know why. Maybe I've never found the right people to get involved with, but, you know, it's something that I may do at some point, just to see how it affects the process.
Now, this book is out in, is this a trade paperback that it's out in?
No, it's you probably got an advanced copy.
Oh, so it's out in hardcover. It's hardcover.
It's out in hardcover.
Do they also do the paperback?
They'll do a paperback, I think, a year from now.
Oh, okay, so there is a paper.
So it's an ebook, and it's a hardcover, and then it will come out in paperback. That is the old-fashioned model, and I guess it still works.
Yeah, exactly. But it's an enjoyable book, and you know, I'm looking forward to more with Amy and Fanny to see where they're going next. You know, it's just they're interesting characters, and I assume they're going to have very interesting adventures coming up.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I can't wait for them to tell me what they're up to.
Do you have a plan as far as where they're going and as far as what's going to happen in the coming books? I mean, do you have an idea of some of their background that we don't even know yet?
Well, as I was writing the last one, I became aware that Amy didn't have a lot of friends her own age. That, you know, she had her family, she had her mother, she had her boyfriend Marcus, but. So I was thinking that if Amy is going to plan her wedding, she needs some girlfriends. You know, she needs some maids of honor, et cetera. So I think the next one may revolve around Amy going on a bonding trip with her bridesmaids and maybe to Sicily, and then getting into some adventure there. So. Including a bridesmaid who is not quite what she everyone thinks she is.
Well, that sounds interesting. Now you've got one of the more memorable ending scenes in this book, and I can't talk about it, but it's making me laugh just to think about it. But
I wanted to tie the beginning into the end, and so. I think that was a very fun way of doing it.
I'm not totally convinced that Marcus and Amy are perfect for each other, but maybe they are.
Well, you know, if they're not perfect, it's interesting. The thing that works against a writer is being static, is stasis. And so if you have a relationship that's totally perfect, and people are supportive of each other, that can be boring. You know, it's it was a Russian writer, and I forget the name right now, said that all happy families are, I forget what he said, it's like all happy families are boring, happy families are interesting, but in different ways. So if you have a little bit of tension in the relationship, if things don't quite work out the way she planned, it could be more interesting.
Well, it's interesting how there's almost a, even with Fanny, you know, you get the sense that Fanny's a little jealous of her happiness. Maybe.
Oh yeah, well she's jealous of, I think at one point in this book or the previous book, you know, Fanny, you know, obviously was raised in a different era. She took care of her daughter. She took care of her husband. And she would have loved to be adventurous, but never quite got the chance when she was younger. So this is her chance to kind of live her adventures through Amy and, you know, obviously get into some scrapes herself.
Yeah, Fanny seems to demand a lot of attention. She seems to love the attention. She's, what do you call that, an attention hog? Isn't there a term for that?
Yeah, definitely. And she's great, great fun to write. You know, she has these disconnects. She has this verbal way of always being in the right, and yet she's totally into new situations. And yeah, she's a very, very fun character to write. I find that the dialogue scenes between her and Amy go very, very quickly.
Well, it doesn't sound like you have a lot of trouble writing. It doesn't sound like you ever get stuck with an idea or anything. It sounds like you're pretty fluent in your ideas.
Well, I think writer's block can come when you just haven't thought through the process. It's not like some mysterious thing. It's just when you're not kind of prepared to go to the next step. You have to sort of think through things a little bit more. And there are times in which that happens to me, in which I'll kind of write myself into a corner and not know where things are going next. And if you just give it a little time, you know, and think about it and make a few notes, then the answer will often come to you.
Will you ever do another TV series, do you think?
You know, TV is hard. I was last summer, yeah, it was only, so I guess maybe a year and a half ago, I was working on a new series for ABC, and we had agreements with three or four foreign networks, with Canada TV, with Canadian TV, with Netflix, with French TV, with German TV, and it fell apart because of the star issues. We had signed a certain star to it, and
you can't tell us who it was.
No. And at some point, we were very much into the process. They were building the sets for it. We had written scripts, and then because of the star issue, it all fell apart. And then they changed the regime. They changed the people in charge of the series at ABC, and they just the new people just kind of threw up their hands and said, "Oh, we're moving on to something else."
I guess that's the way it is in Hollywood. That's the way TV works.
I mean, you get paid very well when it works, and when it's not, but when it doesn't work, then you just man up and say, "Okay, on to the next thing."
What series do you think you could write for? If you were given, if somebody said to you, you can write for any TV show you want, which one would you pick?
Things are so dark these days. I mean, I love the dark series. I mean, we're, our stuff tends to be lighter. I think Elementary is a series I probably could write for. It's got very nice twists and hints. There was a series that was sort of a guilty pleasure. It wasn't a great series, but it was called The Mysteries of Laura.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're around, I think, for
Did that get canceled? I guess it did. It's kind of disappeared.
I think it ran for a year and a half. It was on the bubble after the first season, and they picked it up, but I don't think it went for another half year after that.
Deborah Messing.
And it was very light. It had some decent mysteries. It was a very light mood to it, which is what I write. I write mysteries that are kind of complicated little mysteries, and then the mood, I like humor in my mysteries. And so things that have some humor and some twisty plots, like Elementary.
I watched Elementary for the first three seasons, and somehow he got on my nerves too much. I don't know why. I couldn't deal with Sherlock anymore, and I don't know why I felt that way. It just kind of turned me off to him. He really started to get dark. I mean, really dark, really kind of vicious and mean. And I don't know whether that was intentional or I like Lucy Liu.
Almost all those things are intentional, and I know that. As I said, I had some friends who worked on The Mysteries of Laura, and after the first season, when they got renewed, they said, it has to be darker. You have to make these stories darker. And, that seems to be what sells these days. You have all these
Walking Dead
lines. Walking Dead, Criminal Minds, I love them. We're watching, because we're in a foreign country, we don't get much TV, so we bring DVDs with us. And right now I'm watching The Killing, which was a great series for us, I think, for 3.5 years. And, that's plenty dark. And, so that's what seems to be capturing the popular imagination.
It's dark but compelling is the way I would describe it. I mean, it's a very compelling show. It's hard to watch the first episode and not want to watch the rest.
Exactly.
I think Joel Kinnaman was just amazing on that show. Just amazing. And now he's gotten all big with Suicide Squad, was it? Yeah, Suicide Squad.
I had not seen that.
Yeah, he's in that movie. It's a bunch of, Will Smith is in it too. It's a bunch of really dysfunctional superhero kind of things. And I think it's played for laughs, but I think it's also played serious too, because I think they're ex-felons or something too, aren't they? Or something like that. I don't know. But I mean, all I know is he was in that and I loved him in The Killing. He plays Holder in The Killing. He's the main.
Right.
Uh-huh. He's wonderful in that. I mean, the dynamic between those two is really what makes the show work.
Oh yeah, yeah. That tends to be a typical formula, in that you get two people who really.
And there was also that sexual underneath it, sexual tension too. I think between him and right. I can't remember the woman's name, the character name, Holder, and the other
right.
Sarah. Was it Sarah? I don't remember her last name, but I think there's sort of a.
Everyone calls her by her last name, yeah.
Right, he does. You're right. And there's just sort of an underlying sexual tension, which you know is never going to happen, but it's just
yeah.
there. And it's also interesting how he gets along with her son. There's sort of the dynamic between him and her son, which is interesting.
That's right.
Very well. It's a very well-written show. Very well. But like you said, it is very dark. But dark is definitely in with Game of Thrones and these other shows. Some of them are too dark. Like, I can't even get into How to Get Away with Murder. And the reason I can't get into that is because of the flashbacks. I don't like flashbacks on TV shows. I get confused.
There's a very jumpy style to it, a very jumpy kind of editing style. We once did Monk was done very old fashionedly. We had long scenes, you know, we didn't jump around from one scene to another, so we had basically long scenes, and we did it all with stationary cameras. We did not, except when we absolutely had to, we did not use a Steadicam. And we did one episode with a director, kind of a well-known director, who used Steadicams to do the whole episode, and we literally had to go back a month or two later and refilm the entire thing because it was too jumpy a style for us.
Interesting. Well, Monk worked in every way. I mean, there were some episodes I didn't like as much as some of the others, but you always have that when you have a show. There's always something you like better than others. You can't. I remember the one in Mexico really, really got to me. I love that one.
That was fun when and these things happen in a group. So you're trying to think, okay, we want Monk to be presumed dead. How do we do that? And then, of course, when someone steals his clothes, I mean, you just kind of sit down as a group, and when you come up with the answer, you know, everybody laughs and you write it down.
Exactly. Well, it's been great to talk to you. This has been a lot of fun. The book is...
Well, thanks, Dave. It was a lot of fun for me, too.
We could talk all day, but I have to let you go at some point to do some sightseeing there.
Yes, talk to someone with a thick Kiwi accent and go hiking.
That's exactly. The book, again, is called Death on the Patagonian Express, and Amy's Travel Mystery. It's out from Kensington Books in hardcover. Came out in January, end of December, early January, wherever you can get it at that time. And it's also, you said it's an e-book, too. And is there an audio of it?
No, I think there was an audio of the first in the series, but there are no, so it's, no, it's not in an audio book.
Okay, I didn't know if Kensington did audios very much. I don't see...
I think occasionally they will sign a contract with Audible or some other...
Is Brilliant still around?
Supplier. I don't know.
Brilliant Audio, they're the ones that I used to... We used to hear from the audio people. But it's been great to talk to you. Thank you so much, and enjoy your travels in New Zealand, you and your partner.
All right, David, thank you.
And this has been David's Book Talk. We'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.